This is the sound of Vietnam 68, a series of special programs recorded by KDTH correspondent Bob Woodward Jr. on his trip to Vietnam in April and early May. The programs are heard each morning at 8:15 on KDTH and each evening at 6:30 on KFMD. The programs are presented by KDTH in cooperation with the bankers at DBNT, 14th and Central. The program today is with PFC Mike Ansell and Richard Hush. Mike Ansell, the son of Mr. and Mrs. Charles K. Ansell, 1023 High Bluff. Hush, the son of Mr. and Mrs. Joseph Hush of 3100 Brunskill Road in Dubuque. This is the second part of a two-part interview recorded by Bob Woodward Jr. at a landing zone for helicopters on Baldy Mountain in Vietnam. Bob is talking with the two Dubuque men about actual contact experiences they have had with Viet Cong or communist troops in Vietnam. If you listen, you can hear outgoing mortar rounds being fired from the area where the interview is made.
How about mines? Do you run into much mining activity in this area?
When we first got over here, I think our second month here, in January, our company, the second platoon that I was with, walked in a minefield and lost half the platoon. And on that whole operation, they lost half the company due to booby traps and mines and this nature.
Okay, getting back to you, Mike. You were out on operations. What were the circumstances that you encountered? Is there any one incident, for example, that stands out in your mind?
No, there's quite a few of them that do. One time we was going by Nui Go Dam. It's a big mountain range down there, south of Chulai. And our platoon encountered some VC action, which we ran into a minefield. It was a path. And every place we'd move, we lost about half our platoon there too. And we got out of there, we started to walk out. Our platoon leader got hit, and which caused us to, we had to call in a vac for all of us. We, after we got all our men medevaced, we had to get our men out. We had five. All the time we was there, we kept getting casualties. Guys would run over, they'd hear their buddy call, and they'd run to the side off, and we had called in dust off, and the dust off come in, and we'd loaded that one up, and we'd had to call another one, because we had to load about five more. One man was killed, and he was a real close friend. Our whole platoon had come over to Vietnam together, you know, and trained back in the States in the 198th, and we was real close. We just like brothers, so it really hurt when a lot of guys got hit.
Mike Ansell, you used the term dust off. What do you mean by that?
That's when a medevac ship comes in, and it's a helicopter. It has a Red Cross on it, and they have a couple medics that come in, and they take a lot of chances coming in on under fire to lift the people out that's hurt and wounded. I say without them, we'd have had a lot more kills that day. I mean, more of the men would have died probably, because they were getting hit by mines. We got one claymore that set a command detonated against us, and it blew one of my friends apart. You know? And he's still alive. He's lost a couple legs and an arm, but he's still alive because of the medevac, I'd say. It had a lot to do with it.
In a situation like that, does a guy have a chance to think of anything else except how to keep out of the way and do his best to fulfill his job?
Yeah, you're thinking of that, but also you're mad at the VC, yet you got to help your buddy, you know, and you're running, and the mine's everywhere. You're afraid to step on the ground because you're afraid a mine would go off, you know. But when you hear your buddy calling, you just forget about it, and you run over to him. That's how a lot of us got it that day, because we was running around a lot, you know. A lot of them got it because they were a lot of buddies. But anyway, it's just something that's in my mind, like you said, that I'd probably stay there for a while.
How about you, Rick Hush? What's in your mind when you're out there on an operation? You think you might be walking into a mined area or possibly subject to sniper fire? What goes through your mind?
Well, you're scared. and you don't. You feel like you're walking on eggs, and if you know it's booby trapped, and it's usually the point man that has to be careful. But he could miss a booby trap like one time. The point man missed one, and the second guy and the third guy got it. But usually they don't mind it. They just use these old Korean base camps. They just take all the markings off of those and lead you through them. And when you get shot at, all you do is get down and try and find them, but usually you can't find them.
There's been a lot of discussion back in the States about how effective our weapons are, especially the M16 against the AK-47, which the communists use. You fellows have had a chance to not only use these weapons, but you've also had a chance to watch what happens in the field with the other fellows in your units. What's your opinion?
Well, if you keep it clean, it'll work. But if you put it on an automatic in a firefight, it gets carving up so fast, and it'll usually jam. So it isn't good to put it on automatic.
And when it's on semi-automatic, you're squeezing off one shot, and then it automatically ejects the shell, cocks, and sets it up for another shot, right?
That's right.
What's your opinion, Mike?
Well, I love the little 16. It's a good little weapon. And many a time we've put out more firepower than Charlie has put out, and it's got us out of a scrape. We've been pinned down. We was walking through a rice paddy, and on both sides of the hill, they've had us pinned down right in a rice paddy. And, well, we've all slicked on automatic and put enough firepower up on top of the hills and that to run off to the sides, you know, undercover. I love the 16. It's a nice little weapon.
How about the rest of the armament which we're using over here? Do you think it's effective? Do you think it's efficient? Do you think it's enough?
Well, I say we got it. I mean, we've got Charlie all beat to heck on the weapons and that. If we'd had more training in guerrilla warfare, you know, I mean, if we could, you know, work more in squads and at night more, and if we knew how to fight like Charlie fights, you know, if we go out and look where he is, you know, we'd be better off. I've played tunnel rat a few times, and I've gone down a few tunnels, which they're remarkable the way they're built, you know, because they go so deep to get away from our concussions of the artillery, and they come up in the floor of a hooch that you'd never see on top. It was just in the dirt, and they just put it down, and they just smooth the dirt out over the hill. You'd never see it. That's where we found a few trap doors, we had a lieutenant that shot a VC, and was in our, I think it was in 1st Platoon, and he shot a VC as he just popped up out of a hatch. A grass hatch that he had a hole in the ground, and the guy dropped a grenade back in the hole, and we had 6 kills that time. And it was under his own grenade, Charlie's. They make mistakes. They make a lot of mistakes, but I don't know. They know the country better than we do, and they know how to fight. I mean, they've, like a lot of people said, they've been fighting it for about 20 years. They know a lot about it.
They have a tendency too, I think, to pick the time and the place, don't they?
Yeah. They watch us at all times. I mean, you can sense it as you walk through the villages and that you're being watched. And it could be anywhere from a little baby son about 5 years old or 3 years old. You just come running and says, GI coming, to give him a warning or something, you know. Or it could be a guy in a tree on top of a hill or something. He don't want to fire at you, never fires at you. You know, maybe you don't even have a weapon. He just sitting there watching you and telling the people where you're at, you know. And you got a sense, I've always sensed it, that we've been watched a few times. I've always tried to escape it, you know. I'd be point man or something, and then I'd try to take a bushy area, you know, go down a valley or something, you know, which is bad because you get trapped down in there and you have a pretty bad thing. But we've gone into a village and we've caught about 11 VC just scattering every which way. And, well, that's where I've got a couple kills there, you know.
Rick, when you're a point man, what kind of communications do you have with your unit behind you?
All you got is your squad leader. He's supposed to be right behind you, and he has a radio.
OK. Okay, I want to ask you, see, you've both been over, what, about 7 months?
It's about that.
Which means you have about five to go, right?
About five, yeah.
Okay, I want to ask you a question regarding how you feel generally about the country, what your impression of it is, and how you feel about being over here in the first place. Rick, how about you?
Well, if you have to do it, I guess you have to. And it's for good, because the people, you got to keep the communists out. And the people themselves are so backward, you got to, when you bring them up to the standard where they can help themselves, then it'll be pretty good, because they'll be able to do it. And they're getting there now with the PFs. And
let's explain the PFs.
Well, they're
Popular
Forces, and the Arvins are the South Vietnamese Army, and we're arming them and training them, and they're starting to work on their own now, and they're doing pretty good. I heard the other day where they got in contact and got about 44 enemy kills. And the terrain in places, the rice paddies aren't too bad, but in the mountains, in the jungles, you walk along and the leeches get on you, and you gotta hack your way in. The only thing that really bothers you is the mosquitoes. They just won't leave you alone.
Are you one of the types that uses the mosquito repellent, or do you just let them go?
No. Sometimes I use it, but most of the time I just cover my whole body up and sleep. It's hot, but it feels better.
Mike Ansel, I'd like to shoot the same question at you. How you find the country, what your impressions are, how you feel in general about finding yourself in Vietnam?
Well, the terrain we was fighting down in Chu Lai was pretty open. I mean, it was about what Charlie wanted in a way, but it had big hedgerows in it, which it took a lot to beat through them, you know. And then a few times we've had CAs into the jungle part, which was really thick. I mean, you couldn't hardly move. And we've worked with alert teams. That's long-range reconnaissance teams out there, which we've got a few kills out there, and snipers and that. That's where Charlie loves it. I mean, he loves to be out there in the thick of it, you know. But he can't do much damage to us when he's there, because it's too thick, and he can't see as much as we can. I think that's where he does most of his training. Stay away from us, you know. I mean, like his R&R goes back in the sticks, you know, recuperates or something. You know?
How do you feel about being over here in Vietnam?
Well, when I first come here, I said, why me, you know? But after I'm here a while, I've got the training, and I thought that, I don't know, it was a job I had to do. I mean, something that I've thought a couple times of extending, because I thought I knew something that a lot of these screen guys don't know, you know, a lot of guys coming over. But I don't know, a guy can get shot up pretty bad over here. I think a lot of my,
Okay, key question, you guys are both from Dubuque. Did you know each other before you came over here?
Very little. I've seen him at school, and we never really got together any one time, but we've always known each other. I think he knew me. And
how about you, Rick? Did you know Mike?
No, it's about the same. I just see him around a lot at school and downtown, but I never really knew him.
Rick, where'd you go to school, and when did you graduate?
I went to Dubuque Senior High, and I graduated in 65.
And you, Mike?
I went to Duke Senior High, and I'm graduating in 66.
Mike, what are your plans after you get back to the States and you're out of the service?
Well, first month I'm going to have an R&R. I think I'm just going to have a few parties and that, and try to get back to used to civilian life. Because when I get out of here, I'll be out of the Army. And I might go back to work and that, get myself a new car and that, start back where I left off.
How about you, Rick?
Well, I'm just gonna screw off for about 2 months and get a job and buy a new car.
We're on Baldy, landing zone Baldy, midway between Chulai and Da Nang, kind of out in the boonies, ugly little small mountain, I guess you'd call it. We've been talking to E4 Mike Ansel, and we've been talking to Sergeant Rick Hosh, both of Dubuque. Thanks very much, fellas. It's been good visiting with you, and good luck. Mike? Yeah.
Thank you.
This is the Sound of Vietnam, 68. A series of special programs recorded by KDTH correspondent Bob Woodward, Jr. on his trip to Vietnam in April and early May. The programs are heard each morning at 8:15 on KDTH and each evening at 6:30 on KFMD. The programs are presented by KDTH in cooperation with the bankers at DBNT, 14th and Central.